And please welcome our guest at your far right, Warren Peach.
Chris Hugo.
Bruce Eames. Right, Chris Brown right here from National Air and Space Museum. Bruce owns the airplane. And Warren's flown everything that was ever designed, I think. Good morning, everybody. Warren Don Lopez, Sr. Tell us about this guy.
I had the privilege of getting to know Don because of a mutual acquaintance from where I'm from in Minot, North Dakota. There was a guy from Minot named Oswin Moose Elker who was in the same unit as Don, same training, did a lot of flying with Don in CBI, China, Burma, India Theater. And we were building our museum up there, and we were doing another addition to things. And Moose had been part of our museum, brought in some artifacts, told some great stories, been a neat part of our history from our local area in Minot. And he mentioned Don Lopez, and I knew who Don Lopez was, obviously, but Don Lopez didn't know me from anybody. But I called him up on the phone, and I said, sir, this is Warren Peach, and we're in Minot, North Dakota, and we're dedicating a building to a guy that I think you know. His name is Oswin Moose, he said. And I said, yeah. He goes, when's the dedication? I'll be there. It was that quick, that simple. And he came up and he spent 3 days with us and dedicated the building to his friend. We had an air show with the Canadian Snowbirds. Don was a phenomenal speaker and started telling great stories. Well, that initiated an opportunity for me to get to know him, because at the time I was flying for a commercial carrier and would have layovers in Washington, and I would take every opportunity I had to go to Don's office. Never meet a more gracious man. Always had time to talk to you. Always treated you like you were the most important person around, and took the time to show me the progress in the Hazy Center that he was working on and the things they were doing. And he loved talking about airplanes. I mean, he was a lot of things, but he was a pilot at heart. And one of the things that I always thought was humorous about working with our dedication in Minot with Don was we were going to take a P-40 out, and we were going to use a Russian L-29 trainer, or a Czechoslovakian L-29 trainer that had been a Russian Air Force airplane, as a formation platform so that we could take Don flying with a P-40, and he could fly formation with a P-40 again. Well, the P-40 overheated while we were taxiing out, so we ended up flying by ourselves in this jet. And here's where the true patriot comes out, because now Don's in a Russian airplane. He's a U.S. Air Force test pilot, and he was unimpressed with the fact that he was in this Russian airplane. And I was like, Don, we can just go back and land if you want. No, he says, we're out here. Why don't you go do something? I said, well, do you want to fly it? He said, no, not really. And I said, okay, well, we'll just go back. No, he said, do something. So I did a roll, and I did a loop or something, and a half Cuban eight. And he says, well, you know, I'm sure it's not much of an airplane, but I'll fly it here for just a little bit. Let me fly it for a little bit. Well, he did everything I'd just done, only did it a little better. And pretty soon he is in the back. He goes, you know, this thing, pretty nice airplane, flies pretty nice. And I think it was really hard for him to say that, but it was kind of fun. Anyway, that's how I got to know Don Lopez.
When we looked just now on the screen and saw the pictures of him when he was flying in CBI, and he looked like he was 12 years old. I mean, how much training had he had before he got into a P-40?
About that much. I don't know.
a lot less than that guy's had.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think any of our kids had the advantage of the advanced training that the enemy had had on both sides, because obviously the Luftwaffe had been practicing for years in the 30s and involved in other skirmishes, and the Japanese had been doing the same, and the Zero was a formidable airplane with trained and experienced pilots, and our guys were going over with minimal training. Yeah. And Chris just told the story that you said Don told you about. He was flying Cubs, and the first time he got in a P-40, he almost went out in the grass.
Yeah. No, Chris, right. Go ahead. Tell that.
Well, I mean, I think he had 40 hours in a Cub. And as mentioned, at 19 years of age, he's in the Chinese Burma Theater. Wow. And his first flight in a P-40, he went on to say later, he said, you know, I wasn't quite ready for the torque. I almost went off the runway.
Yeah.
But he was a quick learner. He fixed that problem.
Yeah.
So, Warren, in your personal contact with him, what kind of stories came out? You said he was a storyteller.
Oh, he was a great storyteller. You know, and I think most everybody here that knows who Don Lopez was has seen the famous painting of Into the Teeth of the Tiger, where he's had a mid-air collision with a Zero during a dogfight, and it takes the wing tip off of the P-40 with the pitot tube gone, and it took the wing off the Zero, and the Zero crashed. And I remember asking Don about that, and he said, yeah, when I came back, they changed my name, and they called me the Destroyer for a while. And he said, but, you know, in that mission, he hit that Zero, and then he went on to join up his lead and finish the mission, flying wing for his lead with the airplane. And that was his first confirmed kill of an enemy airplane. So I had a print, and I wanted him to sign it for me. He said, well, I already signed it. You know, it's already signed. And I said, yeah, but I'd kind of like to watch you sign it, if you don't mind. So he wrote on there, we were low on ammunition, so I just winged him. And then he signed his name. But, you know, he had great stories. He told a lot of stories about our local guy, about Oswin Elker up there, and how funny Oswin was. One of the things that, if anybody's read the book, and if you haven't, I suggest you do. This is called Into the Teeth of the Tiger in the Smithsonian History of Aviation series. Don wrote this. It's got a lot of good stories in it. One of them is about 10 of the guys that had just gotten checked out in the CBI, and they were waiting to be assigned to their assignment. They didn't know for sure where they were going to go, and one of the commanders needed 10 L-5 observer planes delivered from their base in Karachi to India. So as soon as the airplanes were assembled, they got these 10 future fighter pilots, and they all got in these airplanes, and one of them was Moose Elker from Minot, and another one was Don, and these other 8 people that were in there. Well, he says they were told specifically no flat-hatting, no buzzing. You guys, we just need these airplanes delivered. He says as soon as they broke ground, they started buzzing their base, and it turned into this huge contest of who could be lower, and they were rolling their wheels on the ground. He said the streets are pretty wide, and so everybody's buzzing down here, and they got people laying on the ground and everything, and he said Moose, not to be outdone, flew underneath a set of high lines, rolled his wheels on the ground, jumped up over a volleyball net, put his wheels back on the ground, and jumped up over a backstop for a ball diamond or something in there and stuff. And in the end, he said he enjoyed it so much he did that 3 or 4 times until they were severely in trouble. And he said that when they got all this done, and it's a great little story in there, when they got all done, they were going to be court-martialed, but the people in China said, no, we need those guys, bring them over. So they said what they'd been waiting for was what they ended up getting for punishment. They, you know, the commander thought he was doing them a great disfavor by sending them to China to go into combat, but he said that's what we were all wanted to do anyway. So that's how they got us the assignment.
So that kind of thing goes on today a lot in jets, right?
Yeah.
I think it happens every once in a while.
Every once in a while.
Bruce,
still got that 70
rule. You own this airplane, so where did that start? When did your interest begin?
Well, it started when I was a kid. I mean, I'm of the age, like a lot of you guys here, that grew up with fathers and friends whose fathers were all in World War II. And we're always waiting till those guys got together in the backyard around a barbecue, drinking beers and starting to talk, because that's the only time you'd hear their stories. And so, you know, all the kids would kind of hide in the bushes and get that. So I grew up, you know, building the airplane models and so on, and really being steeped in that history and really being inspired by it. And it wasn't until years later, after years of going to air shows and walking through Warbird alleys and et cetera, that I got to the point where I could actually do something about it, and was really fascinated and motivated to not just be somebody trading warplanes, but somebody actually bringing them back to life. And so this project was, to me, just a penultimate project to do, because it was a phenomenal airplane and one that a lot of people don't get to see, this type of model of airplane, but also because of its connection. Don's story to the CBI, which is another theater of the war that a lot of people just aren't as in tune to. And then, of course, a great story about a great patriot like Don, who sets just a phenomenal example. And so it was a done deal. I mean, this was the project.
So there's the history of the airplanes themselves, but there's also the human histories involved.
Absolutely. I mean, the planes are phenomenal. Let's face it, we all love warbirds. There's something about that era of plane design and fighter planes that there's a certain special romance about them, and they were built out of need because of what we were facing in the world at the time. But they're machines. And so the things that make them come alive are the guys that actually came off the farms in 1939, 40, 41, and started getting trained to fly these things in combat that bring them alive. And that's what really makes them special.
So, yeah, Chris?
Yeah, I was going to add, David, that something I've come to appreciate in my relatively new role at the Smithsonian, I'm privileged to hold the position that Don did for many years. And, in fact, that print, the original, is right there in my office. It's wonderful. But something I've come to appreciate is that, in addition, museum people, we call them artifacts. I know that's kind of hard. And for me, I still call them aircraft. But they really, to your point, Bruce, they really sit silent. As beautiful and as impactful as they are, it's really the stories and the people behind them that bring it to life. And I think what you've done so well is to allow the artifact, the aircraft, to tell the story of a great, great American and the contributions that he made at a pivotal time in our country's history.
Yeah, Warren.